Public Radio News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Google the words Stanford University and organic food, and then sit back and watch the fur fly. Last week, Stanford School of Medicine released a study concluding that organic food isn't nutritionally better for you than conventionally grown food. The report garnered huge attention, much of it negative. Organic farmers and their loyal consumers blasted the study, saying it completely missed the point. The organic advantage isn't about measuring nutrients, they said. It's that eating organic means ingesting fewer pesticides, which they argue helps both our bodies and our planet. But in some quarters, the study was called a welcome relief. The news that conventional fruits and veggies can be just as good for your health while a lot less taxing for your wallet. Today in The Exchange, the ordeal over organic. We'll look at what this study says and what it doesn't say. And let's hear from you. Do you eat organic or not? What's leading you to make that choice? And what do you make of this study showing that, at least on a nutritional level, organic's not really any better? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests. Joining us from California is Steve Savage. He's a biologist with a PhD in plant science from UC Davis. He's also a consultant for the agricultural technology industry who's written widely about farming and agriculture. And Steve, thanks for getting up early there in California, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Joining us from Connecticut is Bill Dusing, Executive Director of the Connecticut Chapter and Interstate Council, President of NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association. And Bill Dusing, good to have you too. Thanks for your time.
Nice to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, and Bill, I want to turn to you first. A lot of organic farmers were very upset with this study. What was your reaction?
It's a very narrow study, which, if you actually read the conclusions, they're pretty interesting. The conclusions, as written in the paper, the published literature lacks strong evidence that organic foods are significantly more nutritious than conventional foods. Consumption of organic foods may reduce exposure to pesticide residues and antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So there are all the wriggle words talking about nutrition, strong evidence, significantly more, you know, which aren't apparently really well defined in the study. And then there is the two benefits of reducing exposure to pesticide residues and antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And then careful analysis of the study have shown that even those things are very much underestimated, those benefits, because of the way they cooked the data, or they looked at the data and talked about it, so that a 30% number reduction, which should have been an 85% reduction in exposure to pesticides, you know, became a 30% reduction. So it's just they underestimated all the benefits. And the whole thing has a feel of a carefully executed public relations strategy by the industrial food system, which is feeling very defensive in the face of all the evidence of the superiority of organic agriculture and the great public interest in organic food and local and organic agriculture.
So it felt like a hit at the organic industry, and you're saying an unfair hit, Bill.
Yes. I mean, I just saw this morning that Oxford University published a study about organic and the environment on the same day. This is the first day of Organic Harvest Month, September, the first business day, September 4th. Stanford published this study, and Oxford published another study, which had the same sort of very hazy, you know, organic isn't the best thing ever, isn't going to save us all, but they're, you know, it may not be that much better than conventional, which is also not correct. But it felt like it was, you know, orchestrated at the highest level by the very defensive industrial food complex that wants to feed us, destroy the planet, and make us sick in the process.
Well, and lots to dig into this hour. And Steve Savage, I should turn to you first. Just your first thoughts when this hit the news last week.
Well, it's interesting. Stanford is known as the farm. That's sort of the nickname for the campus, which is kind of funny because the last thing in the world that it is an agricultural school. And so I think the idea that Stanford is part of some industrial conspiracy is a little bit out there. In fact, when you read interviews with the authors, they were kind of surprised at their results. But the one thing I would say is that this is what's called a meta-analysis. And so this is not somebody setting out and designing an experiment to answer a question. It's sitting there looking at what have hundreds of other people written in the literature. So, yeah, they were pretty much stuck with what is published. And as Bill said, their comments were about what is out there in the literature. And so, I don't know. There's limits to that kind of study, but it's also good to step back sometimes as opposed to just bounce back and forth study to study.
Well, and I want to talk about that in just a minute, the idea that this isn't original research. It's what, as you said, Steve, a meta-analysis. So they weren't doing their own original research. They were looking at almost 240 other studies on this issue. But I'm curious, Steve, again, as someone who has at times been critical of some of the health claims of organic food, your reaction when this came out, did you think finally someone's saying what needs to be said or what?
Well, I guess I didn't find their result on nutritional things at all surprising.
You weren't surprised, yeah.
Well, because the nutritional content of foods, particularly things like fresh fruits and vegetables, is extremely variable. And so there would have to be sort of an extraordinary underlying difference to actually be able to detect it. Without a huge sampling, every tomato that you pick off of, even a single tomato vine, is going to differ in some details of its nutritional content. And so, I guess I wasn't surprised at all with the result they got.
Let me invite our listeners again to join us, gentlemen. And a lot more to talk about. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at that study from Stanford University that caused a lot of controversy last week, saying that there is little evidence of health benefits, nutritional benefits, from organic foods. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. Tell us what you make of this study, and also if you eat mostly organic food or not, what's leading you to make that choice. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And, you know, Bill Dusing and Steve Savage, I just want to put this out there that we did invite Stanford to join us. I know a lot of the controversy has been about how the study was done and who worked on the study. We did invite Stanford to join us. They were overwhelmed with requests and could not meet our request. But so I want to just put that out there. But Bill, ask you one more question about the study itself. Steve mentioned that it is a meta-analysis. In other words, it's not original research. They looked at almost 240 other studies. How is that significant in your mind, Bill?
Well, as I understand, they looked at studies from 1966 to now. The field of organic food and what it is has varied enormously during that time. I've been involved since 72 when I first found out about NOFA. And just among the farmers I work with and the people I know, the way we've grown, the way we are using plants, using seeds, using soil amendments, using organic methods has improved so much, and there weren't even uniform standards until 2002. So it's and given also, I agree with Steve about that the incredible variability. It's like the soil test, University Soil Test Lab in Connecticut doesn't measure nitrogen because it's so voluble, changeable in time. So that each vegetable is going to be different. So we have to look beyond the nutrition to see what we eat. And the thing we can do with organic is we can say yes to a whole suite of good things, including not using chemical fertilizers, not using pesticides, having more healthful conditions for the farm workers, having fewer runoff of toxic material, and actually working with nature, which is the heart of what organic agriculture is about and what people are, the way organic farmers and consumers think of it.
Well, and let's talk about that, gentlemen, because of all the critiques I've seen of this, that is the number one critique. And Bill, you can probably say it better than me, but the idea that it's not about nutritional compounds, vitamins A, B, C, whatever. It's that it's important to ingest fewer pesticides because of the impact of those on our bodies and the impact of those on our planet. That's the main point, right? That's your problem.
Yes, that's where you start. And then once you start, that's where I got into organic agriculture, was not wanting to use pesticides. And then you understand about the soil and building the ecosystem in the soil, building biodiversity, which is really the heart of what organic agriculture is about, according to the USDA. They have a wonderful definition of organic agriculture and statement of its goal on their website. It really is about solving the problems that we have here on this planet.
What do you think about that, Steve? I want your thoughts and then a couple other questions. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, first of all, I think the vast majority of consumers have the impression that organic agriculture means no pesticides, and that's actually not true. There's a rather long list of pesticides which are allowed on organic crops, and some of them are very soft sort of things, most of which are also used in conventional agriculture, but some of them are not. Some of them are, you know, towards the more toxic end, particularly the copper-based fungicides, which are very widely used in organic agriculture because they don't have very many other options. Those are things that are used at higher rates than most conventional pesticides, and copper is copper. It's not like it goes away in the environment. So I think this whole idea that there's some dangerous aspect of pesticide residues on crops is a message that has been pounded in for decades, but actually isn't true when you look into it. This study didn't really have much in the way of data to work with. Of the 9 studies they looked at that compared pesticide use, 7 of those were from Europe, 1 was from Australia, and the 1 from the U.S. was from the time frame 1994 to 1999, and a lot has changed since then. So the reality is there's a much better data set that is generated every year by the USDA. They take thousands of samples of food commodities, test them each for hundreds of different possible pesticides, and the data that comes out says that what we can find is extremely low levels.
And
frankly,
Steve, I got to wrap you up there. I'm so sorry. We will pick it up after a short break and take your calls, so stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. More on organic food on trial on the exchange on NHPR than at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. The U.S. economy since 2008. Who's better off and who's not? After you cast your vote tomorrow, tune into NHPR for complete coverage of the results. We'll be live at 8 p.m. on primary night, tracking the results as they come in with analysis. Plus, we'll be at campaign headquarters around the state. And you can track all of our coverage at nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from the Community College System of New Hampshire, offering educational advancement for nursing students and graduates to baccalaureate and advanced nursing degrees. And from Holly Oil, a full-service oil company, keeping New Hampshire families warm since 1961, delivering bioheat to customers throughout Manchester and Concord. Holly Oil, HALLEOIL.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a new study from Stanford University has resurrected the debate over the health benefits of organic food. Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. What do you make of this Stanford study indicating that, at least in terms of nutrients, organic food isn't necessarily any better for you? Do you yourself eat mostly organic food? Why or why not? And what's leading you to make that choice? Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange at nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. We have 2 guests this hour. Bill Dusing joins us from Connecticut, Executive Director of the Connecticut Chapter and Interstate Council President of NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association. From California, Steve Savage, a technology industry biologist with a PhD in plant science from UC Davis. He's written a lot on farming and agriculture. And Steve Savage, before the break, I had to cut you off there. You were talking about pesticides, finishing up a point about pesticide levels and how much they're present in organic and non-organically grown foods. Go ahead and finish that up, and then I've got a question for Bill, too.
Yeah. Well, I think when most people hear the word pesticide, they imagine something, you know, really nasty. And, you know, there was a time when there were a lot of things like that, but this is decades ago. Since then, a lot of these things have been replaced with new alternatives that are really, really very low in toxicity. In fact, of the things that in most recent data that's available from USDA from 2010, almost 40% of what was detected was something that is actually less toxic than, say, table salt or vinegar. 95% of what they found in terms of pesticide residues are things that are less toxic than caffeine. And caffeine in your cup of coffee is present at orders of magnitude higher concentration than those pesticides are there. So sort of this idea that you really need to avoid foods because they have pesticides, I think the continuous repeating of that is part of the reason that the gains that we used to be having in fresh produce consumption have actually been stopped and even retreating nationwide. It's a real disservice.
Well, and Bill, I have a real basic question for you, and then we'll go to our callers. If the concern is about pesticides, can't you just scrub them off, you know, a good scrubbing brush and some warm water there?
I think many of them are systemic and aren't scrubbed off. I know they're inside squash and other vegetables where they've taken up from the soil and they're actually detected in the fruit. I've seen results of studies that way. But I don't think that, you know, individuals avoiding pesticides is the reason to do any of this. I think the effect of pesticides on the environment, especially on the farm workers who are exposed to them day in and day out in many times brutal working conditions, are the reason we want to make things better and not use the pesticides. And also, many of these low-impact pesticides, so-called, have enormous impacts on the biodiversity. The effect of the neonicotinoids on pollinators is just enormous.
Neonicotinoids are a type of pesticide?
They're a type of pesticide. They're used to kill grubs on lawns. They're used to treat corn seed before it's planted on the 90 million acres in this country. And it's so powerful that when they treated the sunflower seeds in France with this, after the sunflower plant grew, flowered, if the bee visited those, it got enough of that toxin to be disoriented.
Wow. So impacts not so much on those of us who might eat the strawberry or the apple, but impacts on the whole system which sustains plant life, you're saying, the pollinators and so forth.
Yes, yes. As well as there's impacts that aren't known about the mixtures of pesticides. And one of the things, there's a man named Charles Benbrook who wrote a real good rebuttal to this Stanford study, and he talks a lot about how many of the organic things, if they were contaminated with a pesticide in this study, they had maybe one pesticide on them, whereas the conventional product sometimes had 5 or 6 or 10 different pesticides, and they've never been tested for their safety in combination.
Let's take some calls, gentlemen. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Keep those emails short. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And Dan is first in Peterborough. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I've been an organic farmer for going on 20 years now, and we struggle constantly with the notion of what is organic and what is nutritious. And so I had some insight into that. And one is that the organic standard has a lot to do with what you don't do and not what you do do. So we have cases where our soils aren't capable of producing nutritious crops, but are capable of being certified as organic because of what we're not doing. So our challenge is to figure out how to go from a soil that's not great to one that's really doing what it's supposed to do.
Well, what are your thoughts on this study, Dan, showing that at least in terms of basic nutrients, there's not a big difference?
Well, I think that one thing that's happening is that now that organic certification is accepted, I believe, worldwide, is that what we're doing is we're buying a certified product, not a product that's proven to be an improvement. So to me, it points out a need to know your farmer.
So,
and, you know, the notion that we can go to Walmart and Mart and buy organic is, you know, is true in the sense that you may be buying a certified product, but it may also be coming from Argentina or Chile or China or wherever, where we don't have the ability to confirm.
Yeah, Dan, this is a point that comes up. Good to hear from you since you're involved in this business. And I think to you, Steve Savage, you know, this has come up that now that organic has gotten bigger, consumers, more consumers are seeking organic products. Some of them do come from China or Argentina, and we kind of are just going on those countries' word that it's organic. We really don't have people down there certifying that they're doing things the organic way, at least as we would define it in the U.S. Go ahead on that, Steve.
Well, actually, they do certifying, but the certification is pretty much a paper trail type of thing. And I think, you know, within the U.S., I don't really have any questions about whether people are doing what they say they're doing. But it doesn't actually involve any testing. There isn't even random testing just to make sure. And frankly, what's coming from China, that's, you know, not a place where I would necessarily believe everything or necessarily be sure that even if somebody's trying to do it right, they're not dealing with like a cadmium contaminated soil or something like that. This isn't an issue on fresh produce, things that can't be shipped, but on grains and fruit juice concentrates and frozen vegetables. There is a lot of that going on, and I'm certainly not the only one who thinks that's not a good idea. I mean, I would totally agree with Dan that the original idea of organic was very much about positive things that you did, and they were way ahead of their time in terms of understanding the need to maintain soil quality. I remember growing up as a kid, I would help my grandfather in his garden, and he was in the 50s and 60s an avid reader of Organic Gardening magazine, and it was all about soil. It was all about building up soil quality. It has become a consumer brand that is, as Dan pointed out, just about what people don't do. And I think a lot of kind of the core, you know, sort of true believers in organic are kind of disappointed with that.
You know, let me ask you about that too, Bill. This is real interesting what Steve says about organic has become a consumer brand. And certainly people like you who are deeply involved say, look, it's never been about this vitamin or that vitamin. It's always been about, you know, caring for the ecosystem, caring for the soil, and so forth, a more sustainable form of agriculture. But what about the average Joe or Jane who just kind of wants to eat better, Bill? How much do you think that they go to the grocery store and buy an organic tomato because they care about the ecosystem, or buy the organic tomato or banana because they think, yeah, this is, you know, this is has more of the good stuff than the regular tomato or banana? One reporter, for example, said, you know, I feel kind of duped into paying higher prices for something that wasn't necessarily better. I wonder what you think about that from the average consumer viewpoint.
Well, I know there are people who might not be average consumers, but certainly don't meet the definition of your typical organic person who really do buy food because they think it's better. And whether that's because the culture has told them that or not, I don't know. But one of the things that I've seen drives people specifically to organic is when they have children. My grandchildren, when their mothers, who in some cases weren't particularly organic, decided, you know, to start buying milk or other products for their babies, they went organic because to avoid the things that the Stanford study found are in there, which aren't in organic food. Let me read you the USDA definition. Organic agriculture is an ecological production management system that promotes and enhances biodiversity, biological cycles, and soil biological activity. It is based on minimal use of off-farm inputs and on management practices that restore, maintain, and enhance ecological harmony. The primary goal of organic agriculture is to optimize the health and productivity of interdependent communities of soil life, plants, animals, and people. which may be one of the most eloquent goals the U.S. government has ever set forth.
Yeah, and I hear you on that.
It's
and again,
very positive. You
yeah,
know?
And people like you who are deeply involved actually really care about that. But I'm wondering about the average person. Do you fear that this is going to turn them away from organic? They're going to go, oh, this tomato and that tomato are the same, and this one's a dollar cheaper.
Some of them, I'm sure, will. I mean, that's the point of the publicity of some of this stuff. I mean, if we really cared about people's health in this society, we'd be talking about processed food and junk food and the stuff that provides the basis of nutrition for so many of the people in this country, and the lack of good food as we put all our resources into growing this 90 million acres of inedible corn and soybeans that has to be passed through animal feeding operations or a factory in order to produce something that then produces, you know, illness and health illness in people with it when they eat the junk food. We need to be more directly connected to the planet through our food. It's our most important connection after air and water.
Let's take another call.
And it needs to be local.
Oh, sorry about that, Bill. I want to just get another caller in here if I could. And this is Elizabeth waiting in Thornton. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. And I love your program. It's wonderful information coming in this morning. My comment is that I think it's all about choice. I think people should be able to choose whether they can eat organic, conventional, or anything on the spectrum in between. And, you know, my concern is that whether people are doing it for philosophical reasons, ecological reasons, spiritual reasons, whatever, it really is a matter of choice. And I see this report as feeding this whole thing on food labeling and maybe getting in the way of that. I think people have a right to know what they're going to eat.
Well, Elizabeth, and, where do you come down on that choice? Do you buy a lot of organic food, no organic food?
I do, but I also buy some conventional food, but I know the farmers, and I know how they farm. And so, I mean, these are choices that I feel good about that I can make.
All right.
And I don't like the fact that we may get to a point where nothing is labeled, so when I have to go to the store, I don't know what the heck I'm getting.
Thanks a lot for calling in, Elizabeth. What do you think, Steve Savage?
Well, obviously in California we're having a ballot initiative right now about labeling, and it's presented as something that's about consumer choice and consumer right to know, but in reality it's something that's written by trial lawyers, that the enforcement of this is going to be by people being able to take things anybody to court. It's got all kinds of weird exemptions. The thing is, I think if somebody says, look, I don't trust the science, I don't trust anything, I you know, they already have the option to buy organic. In terms of what is out there in the food supply, it's well known, it's well documented. Somebody can do a little bit of homework and easily understand what crops are GMO and what crops are not GMO. And there's no need for labeling. Labeling should be officially mandated labeling should be reserved for things where people have actual evidence that there's something to be concerned about, like a specific allergen or trans fats when those came up.
But you're not taking issue with the labeling of something organic. You think that's
no,
okay?
No, not at all. That's fine, and that is certainly in place, and people like Elizabeth have that option whenever they want to or not.
Well, Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call. And again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, here's an email that just came in from Michelle. She says, I never bought organic because I thought it had more nutrients than conventional foods. I buy it due to the lack of chemicals, pesticides, and their non-GMO, genetically modified, properties. I look at it for the long-term effects that all of these toxins have had on our planet, especially water. So repeating some of the themes that you brought up, Bill. She also says, I have a toddler, and he eats almost all organic, and I eat as much as I can afford, but I figure it's more important that he isn't exposed to all those things from the start. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, so I figure I was probably exposed to many horrible things then. I suffer from a chronic disease disease, which doctors have had trouble diagnosing. My sister now has stage 4 cancer. Neither of us know where these diseases come from, as they don't run in our family. Adding more toxins to our body through what we eat and drink just adds fuel to the fire. Thanks, Michelle, for the email. Bill, two interesting thoughts there. One you brought up earlier about, you know, we are more concerned overall about pesticide levels when it comes to young bodies, which are still developing, and certain levels of pesticides will be higher in a smaller body. What about that other point, though, about the suspicion that chronic diseases could be inflamed by some of these toxins in conventional foods?
I think that's a good question. I mean, I think at least three of the main chronic diseases in our culture are connected directly with the way we eat. The high fat, high sugar, high processed food. And if you think about it, in the last 60 or 70 years, we've completely changed the way human beings eat. For the 100,000 years before that, we ate pretty much whole fruits and vegetables and animal products. And then in the 50s, we began using fertilizers and pesticides and additives and colors and flavors. And then in 97 or 98, we started using genetically modified ingredients in our food. So we've made these huge changes in these basic biological systems, which evolve very slowly over time. So I think it's very likely that some of these diseases, some of the strange things that are happening, are connected to the way we eat, probably some of them in ways we don't know. There are, chemicals that are lining many of the cans, even the cans in some organic food, I think.
You can eat high-fat organic food, though, right? I mean, you can, you can eat all organic and still get heavy and get heart disease and diabetes.
Oh, yes, yes. But I think it's one of the things about the organic food is it has nutrients in it, which the junk food doesn't have, so that your body responds to being fed the kind of things it wants to have, whereas your body doesn't get what it needs, it craves more and more trying to get those levels of vitamins or minerals, which are so lacking in highly processed foods.
I guess I'm asking, though, could you potentially eat an all-organic diet and still be, feeding yourself junky foods? You could eat organic chocolate and organic chips all day long. You know what I'm saying? It's not the organic versus non-organic. It's what you're eating.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we should mention taste, because I've heard a lot of people say the reason they buy organic is because it tastes better. And whether it tastes better because it hasn't been sprayed with pesticides or because the soil ecosystem is more complete or the fertilization is more in keeping with nature's methods, many people say organic food tastes better.
All right. And Steve, I got a question for you, too, on our emailer's concern, but we'll take it after a short break. We'll also take a lot more of your calls, too. So stay with us. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Gripponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Gripponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at gripponi.com. And from Milne Travel American Express, with nearly 100 local travel counselors seeking additional travel pros to join their company. Resume and thoughtful cover to jobs at milnetravel.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Sustaining memberships are powerful. Here's why. Your contribution is deducted each month from an account of your choice for as long as you want. It's convenient for you, and it creates a stable foundation of support for your public radio service. Being able to count on your support means NHPR can do a better job of serving you. Sustaining members, transforming the future of public radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, how New Hampshire's new voter ID law will affect the elections in November, but not tomorrow's primary. Email us your questions and comments before the program at exchange@nhpr.org, and join us tomorrow morning live at 9 for that conversation. Today, we're looking at the debate over organic food and farming in light of a recent Stanford University study that caused a lot of controversy, finding little evidence of nutritional benefit from organic food. We're looking at that. We want to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And Steve Savage, Bill Ducing, before we go back to the phones, I do want to follow up with you as well, Steve, on this email that we got from Michelle. I do hear this from a lot of folks. Concerns over pesticides and additives in our food may be behind rising cancer rates. What do you think, Steve?
Well, I think that's one of the most thoroughly studied questions that there is out there, and definitely the conclusion would be that it is not the pesticides that are doing that. They're extremely well screened for those sorts of effects. If you look statistically, people during this entire period of time have been living longer and in many ways far more healthy. I think it's just the steady drumbeat of sort of fear-mongering, saying, oh, you should be worried, you should be worried. And the net effect of that is that a lot of people, instead of being able to just enjoy their food and their life, spend a lot of time worried. And actually, statistically, a lot of people eat less good, healthy fruits and vegetables because they have been scared off by the kinds of things that are being said all the time.
Although we were told, back in the day, we were told that smoking was okay. So people are skeptical, Steve.
Yeah, and they could be. But when it comes to these sorts of things, these are extremely intensively studied. It costs about $200 million just to do the testing and long-term testing included that's required to get any new pesticide registered. So those have been looked at very carefully. I think what's interesting is people, get very concerned about these things because they hear this all the time. And yet, if you go to the website, say, of Environmental Working Group or somebody like that that says they're out there to protect us from toxins, they don't even mention mycotoxins, which are things from nature that are way more scary than any pesticide. And these get like no attention, even though they're like a leading cause of death in the developing world.
But there's not much you can do about those kinds of toxins that occur naturally, so.
Well, there is. I mean, and the food system does a great job here of screening those things out. Now, if you're talking about the third world, if you're talking about grains out of China, it seems like every time the Chinese government does turn around and actually look, they're finding like aflatoxin in their food supply. So, those things are like real dangers, and that deserving much more attention than these other things.
Let's take some more calls, gentlemen. Lots and lots of people who want to jump in on our conversation. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Josie's calling from Unity. Hi, Josie. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm calling to make a comment here that I'm one of the 1% of agriculture and farmers that are trying to fight to feed the country and the world. And I really get upset when people like one of your callers made it sound like there's processed food and there's organic and there's nothing in the middle. There's a lot of good, healthy stuff in the middle that isn't totally organic. And it just really bugs me because I know so many people, including close friends, who just automatically think that because I raise sheep, I've got all kinds of hormones and growth things in them and everything else. I have to use penicillin once in a while when I have a sick animal. But farmers and ranchers, I spend a lot of time out in Montana. I've worked in Wyoming. I've worked out west a lot. The real farmers and ranchers can't afford to put all the hormones and the growth things and all that stuff in their animals. There's a lot of good food out of there and also out of the ground, not just the animals. That is not totally organic, but is a heck of a lot healthier than things like the processed foods that come out of boxes. So I just wish people would realize that you don't have to go 100% organic and you can still get some pretty healthy stuff. And we farmers are trying hard to produce that.
You know, this is a really interesting call. Josie, thanks a lot for calling. Bill, what do you think about this? You know, we don't have to go all out with organic. There's really good stuff in the middle, as Josie says. What do you think, Bill?
I think that's right. And we support all farmers we need, especially the local farmers. I mean, it's much better to buy your food locally. If you can buy it organic, that's good. But if not, knowing your farmer, visiting the farm, going to the farmer's market, getting a community support agriculture share, buying your local meat from your local sheep producer, those are all important things. And I don't think that that caller was part of the industrial food system, the kind that where the antibiotics are used is in the confined animal feeding operations. And, you know, there's a whole spectrum of agriculture, and a lot of it's in the middle, but the industrial side, the input side, the agriculture technology side wants to pull us towards more of these pesticides and more of these, inputs and more concentration in agriculture. You mentioned the smoking thing. Apparently, one of the researchers in the Stanford study was involved in a study of smoking back in the 60s that was a similar kind of meta-analysis which purportedly showed that smoking wasn't bad for your heart.
Yeah, and that gets to the skepticism that people have. They say, oh, we've been told this before, and then 20 years later we find out not so.
Well, no, it's perfectly deception. It's designing a study to find evidence that supports your flimsy case. In this case, in the 60s, it was that smoking's okay, that cigarettes are fine. Now it's the case that organic food isn't what we need. We need industrial food.
Well, and like I said, we tried to get folks from Stanford on, but they were overwhelmed and couldn't accommodate us. So we'll leave it at that for now. I want to take another call. This is Tony in Portsmouth. Hi, Tony. Go ahead. You're on the air. Tony, you're on the air. You with us? All right. Hopefully Tony will call back. I've got a lot of emails I'd like to share with you, gentlemen. This is an email from Mary. She says, I'm a nutritionist and worry about how this study is being portrayed to the public that's already confused about nutrition. Organic research is still in its infancy. We're still just learning about what methods need to be used to do true comparative studies. She says, nutrition is about food as a whole, not just the nutrients inside. That is why the pesticides that aren't on organic foods is still a very important point. While the study says it's not clinically relevant, I think that's a premature finding. We're still learning what the clinical relevance of pesticide exposure truly is on human health. We don't know how much is too much, but in the end, I think we can all agree that pesticides are not something anyone wants on their food. Mary concludes by saying, while we continue to learn how they impact our health and the environment, it is an important finding that organic foods truly help us reduce our exposure to these potentially harmful substances. Bill, real quick, I'm assuming you agree wholeheartedly with what Mary says.
Yes. She got it right, I think. It's a precautionary principle. Be careful, you know, if it may help you. And those pesticides, which are thoroughly screened and tested, they're thoroughly screened individually in respect to how they will affect a healthy adult male, which is why people are so correct to worry about children. And the elderly and people whose compromised immune systems are one of the first areas we want to adopt organic food to get away from these potential toxins.
Steve, what do you think real quick there, and then we'll go back to our listeners?
Well, okay, there's this concept that only synthetic chemicals are something you should think about in terms of toxicity. Actually, most of the pesticides that you eat every day, if you eat fruits and vegetables, are pesticides made by the plant. Plants can't run, so they make a whole bunch of intermediary metabolites, which are intended to ward off their pests. And some of those we end up actually liking as flavors or caffeine or capsaicin in peppers. But actually, from a toxicity point of view and in terms of the dose that we eat and the whole idea of a complex mixture of things, that's pretty much what food is about. There are all kinds of toxic things in food. If you were to take those out and feed them at high doses, they would be literally toxic. Some of the things that people like about organic food may just be that they're under more stress from pest attacks. They have more sort of the defense chemicals that the plant makes. Again, if you were to take these out, purify them, feed them to rats in a lab, you would find out that these are more toxic than commercial pesticides.
again, most commercial pesticides are not toxic to people. Something can be very toxic to a plant or to a fungus without having any toxicity towards mammals at all.
Let's take a couple more. Oh, go ahead. Did you want to finish up there?
But I'm just saying that this whole idea of, gee, there's this soup of chemicals that we don't understand all their interactions, that's true of everything, whether there was any pesticide ever applied to it.
Well,
but we have
go been, ahead, Bill. Yeah.
We have been eating food, eating peppers, and drinking coffee for centuries. So we have some experience with that. And those are just fundamentally different than the stuff that we make in the lab.
Here's a couple more emails. And, gentlemen, yeah, I've got a pile of them I'd like to share with you. This is from Eric. He says, we're missing an important point in the conversation. Industrial organic on big farms just avoids the prohibited chemicals and replaces chemical NPK with natural sources such as alfalfa meal. Eric says it's not about building the soil the way a small organic farmer in New Hampshire will. Industrial organic, he says, is not more nutritious. Small local organic probably is more nutritious and safer. This is a distinction that a couple emails have made. What do you think? First, to you, Bill Dusing.
Well, organic is a holistic practice, philosophy, science, and it's, you know, the where the food's grown is as important as how it's grown and who grows it. And NOFA and our organization chapters in seven states in the Northeast are working on building the agricultural infrastructure locally so we can eat that way. And because we need to have ways that people can be involved in the food system. Food has got to be the center as we move forward in how we develop our civilization, because it is so critical to the way we manage the earth, the way we manage our bodies, the way we manage health. Health and ecology are two of the basic principles of organic agriculture. Fairness and care are the other two. And that can't happen on an industrial scale for the long term. It needs to happen locally. We need to grow our local food systems, which several farmers there from New Hampshire you've talked to are doing, and farmers all over, the interest in growing food locally among the young folks here in Connecticut, it's phenomenal.
Well, and we've got a couple more emails. Here's one that came in that's long, so apologize in advance to this person, but I can't read the whole thing. But here's what they say. The Stanford study flies in the face of claims being made by organic activists that organic food is always much more nutritious, pure, and hence safer than conventional and biotech food. This person says, domestic organic farmers fill only a small and ever-shrinking minority of the $30 billion per annum market for organic food in the U.S. The rest is imported from countries with notoriously lax environmental standards, such as China and Mexico and Brazil. Believe it or not, with the USDA's good name on the label, and it's all based on paperwork without a single test to verify or purify nutritional value. This person says the organic industry is finally getting what he or she calls its comeuppance in the Stanford study. Boy, lots to dig into there. But Steve, to you first. We touched on it, but touch on it again, please. We don't always know what we're getting.
Well, I would agree with that. The system, the way it works, is something that in any other system would be called a conflict of interest. The person who goes out and does the certification, the inspection, once a year inspection that occurs. That's pre-announced. Like I say, there's no testing. And the certifier doesn't actually get paid until the farmer is able to sell it as organic. And so there's not an awful lot of incentive to say, oh, I'm going to detect something that isn't right. Now, again, I doubt that there are very many, you know, if any, farmers in the U.S. or Canada or something that would be cheating on that. But I guess I wouldn't be that confident outside.
What do you think, Bill?
I think we need to grow our food here and not import it. The FDA says we import 2/3 of our fruits and vegetables.
Wow, it's a lot.
It is a lot. And they're made mostly water, 70-80% water, and we're using non-renewable fossil fuel to bring that water from China, from the deserts of California, to our region. We need to work very hard to increase the amount of local and organic food that we're producing in the region. It should be our number one priority.
What do you guys think, just to close out with you, and maybe to you first, Steve, overall, what's the impact of this study on the organic food business, on the choices that people try to make when they go to the grocery store?
Well, I think that the true believers, there wouldn't be any kind of study of any type that would ever change their mind. And I just hope that there are some people who, I happen to know a lot of these people who sort of feel guilty that they're not doing that. They don't want to spend the extra money, but then they feel bad about it. And I'm just hoping that there are some of those people who can go ahead and actually enjoy their food.
What do you think, Bill? Your thoughts on this?
Well, the main effect I've seen is I've had to talk about it a lot and write about it a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, that's what the folks at Stanford said, too. Yeah.
And I think it, you know, as I mentioned when I read their conclusion, it doesn't significantly say anything except it causes this huge discussion. We, contrary to what that last letter said, we don't promote it as more nutritious. We've been promoting it as better for the planet and also as a way that the young folks, when I was a young folk and started, wanted to farm because we want to farm in a way that connects with the earth, in a way that connects with the knowledge, traditional knowledge in places all over the planet of multi-cropping and manuring and composting, cover cropping, combined with the most modern science. As we explore this, we find many ways to really grow things well using organic methods and without the fossil fuel derived chemical inputs, which are damaging to the planet, whether or not they're damaging to our health when we eat them on our fruit and vegetables.
Well, gentlemen, this has been really interesting, and I want to thank both of you for taking the time with us this hour. Bill Dusing, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
Bill Dusing, Executive Director of the Connecticut Chapter and Interstate Council President of NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association. Steve Savage in California, thanks a lot for being with us as well.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
Steve Savage, he's a biologist with a PhD in plant science from UC Davis and a consultant for the agricultural technology industry. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page. You can find out more about upcoming shows, get extra links and material. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, New Hampshire's new voter ID law. The U.S. Justice Department recently approved our law requiring photo identification, not for tomorrow's primary, but beginning with November's general election. Supporters say an ID is needed to combat voter fraud, but others say it will disenfranchise some voters. We'll look at what to expect and how the requirements will change over time. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show.